Welcome to another episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast. I'm your host, Claire Malky. To get into the Halloween spirit this week, I decided to face my fears and watch a spooky, scary movie. It was pretty rainy here in Chicago too, which made for the perfect setting. So, with that haunting feeling intact, I queued up the Stephen King classic, Carrie. By the way, it would actually be less terrifying to be at Carrie's prom than spend another day in Trump's America. We've got an excellent show in store for you all this week. Up first, this week's top headlines. Then, we'll be exploring the political blue shift and what it could possibly mean for this upcoming election. And lastly, we're headed back in time to our very first show, where we'll revisit our episode on voting and the Electoral College. You might want to pour yourself some extra shots of tequila for this episode. I know I'll definitely need them. And don't forget your salt and limes. So, let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. Last week, the Pope came out and endorsed same-sex marriage. So, I guess get ready for Trump supporters to start saying how they never really liked the Pope anyway. Last week during the debate, analysts claimed Trump performed much better when he demonstrated the ability to wait for his turn to speak, meaning that the bar for what behavior counts as presidential is now slightly higher than the bar you hold for your dog. Hell, even dogs don't bark at postal workers as much as he does. During the debate, President Trump said that he was counting on military generals to distribute vaccines because he was worried that mailing it would lead to voter fraud. CNN touted that they had a mute button, the same way Trump touts he has a replacement for healthcare. We have it, but we just don't want to show it to you. Only hours after Justice Barrett was sworn in, she was asked to recuse herself in a Pennsylvania elections procedures case, citing a federal ethics law, in case their impartiality might be reasonably questioned. This looks to be an ongoing issue for Barrett, as Trump listed impartiality as the top job description. On Wednesday in Delaware, Joe Biden voted early. I wonder who he voted for. Like, I wonder if it's a four weddings moment, where you can't vote for yourself. As if that wouldn't stop Trump. In a story from NPR this week, reports found that, as president, Trump has weaponized masculinity. Our response to this story is, well, no shit. At this point, Trump isn't even toxic in his masculinity. He's fatal. In science news this week, two West Virginia University researchers discovered that Twinkies can actually decompose. A fact I've known ever since I was a child, when I realized that smell from under my bed wasn't my socks, but actually the moldy snack I left for safekeeping. In sports news, the LA Dodgers won the World Series. Donald Trump was excited by this news, as he has long been a self-proclaimed Dodger. In future news, we're taking the week off next week. I know this sounds like a joke, but we're taking the week off next week. Catch our next episode on Friday, November 13th. In a coronavirus update, cases are again on the rise. With that in mind, we want to remind you to wear a mask, wash your hands, and stay 6 feet apart. I know that COVID fatigue is kicking in, but it is so important to stay vigilant. And that was this week's headlines. This This week's episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated is brought to you by Theater in the Dark, A War of the Worlds, a virtual audio drama. A link to tickets will be listed in the show notes.
No one would have believed.
You see this? What's happening in the suburbs?
In the first years of the 21st century.
Wi-Fi's not working.
That this world was being watched keenly and closely.
What's happening?
By intelligences greater than our own.
I've seen Kankakee. We should drive out and see it.
Careful. Don't get too close.
Dr. Pearson, have there been fresh attempts to signal these beings?
This October.
It's something more than a meteorite.
Theater in the Dark presents...
It's a cylinder.
And it's opening.
A War of the Worlds. A virtual audio drama performed live every night over Zoom. Pay what you can tickets available now at theaterinthedark.com.
Up next, this week's deep dive. Here at the Sit Still Studio, we usually examine topics that maybe you've heard of, but don't necessarily know how they work. Topics like nonprofits, healthcare, or socialism. But today, we're tackling a subject that you might not recognize right off the bat. The Blue Shift. Although this subject sounds like the title of a modern dance concert, it's actually a political phenomenon. It has to do in part with absentee balloting. Say a Republican in your state is running for re-election, and they're doing okay. But they're only doing marginally better than their Democratic counterpart. Then, over the week after an election, the absentee ballots get counted, which in part causes the Democrat to win. Or vice versa. This phenomenon has only been documented in the last few elections, and gained headway in 2016 after Trump's narrow national popular vote lead of 950,000 at the time of his victory speech. But in the weeks following the election, it turned out Trump had actually lost the popular vote by 2.9 million votes. The blue shift more recently appeared in 2018 in the Arizona senatorial race, where an early gain by Republican Martha McSally was outrun by Democratic candidate Kyrsten Sinema throughout the week after the election day, as absentee ballots were counted. You might be thinking, but Claire, how is it possible for a candidate to win after election day? I thought results were immediate. Not quite. Actually, not at all. It's more the notion that elections may be held up until election day. Like, that's the hard stop to new votes coming in. Between certifying and tallying votes, this process to sort through ballots obviously takes time. For example, the certifying process for votes in LA County can take up to 30 days, and that's just to make sure the ballots are legit. Every state and municipality has their own system to complete the certification. So, if you're interested in how your state certifies and counts votes, be sure to do your own research. Now, what usually happens on election night is that the media gets a hold of projections from in-person voting, exit polls, and computer modeling that predicts who will most likely be certified as winning the election. But, who the media projects as winning and who actually wins are not always one and the same. And the wacky thing is, this media confusion isn't a new thing. Back in the election of 1948, the Chicago Daily Tribune misprinted that Governor Thomas Dewey had defeated Harry S. Truman. Oof, that's gotta be so awkward. Like, at least with a tweet, you can delete it and maybe only a handful of people would see it. But a misprinted newspaper? Ugh, that's so tough to walk back. Although the blue shift is an ongoing process, there's still not a ton of research available as to why this shift leans Democratic. And actually, according to Ohio State University researcher Edward Foley, before 2000, this same phenomenon actually benefited Republicans. In a quote from The Atlantic, Foley states, "I think an honest assessment of this is that we're still learning. While we have made some progress as a field, I don't myself feel confident that we've really pinned down causality. So, that is the background of a blue shift. It is important to know because there is a strong likelihood that a blue shift will dramatically occur this election. Why is that? Mostly the coronavirus. Because of COVID-19, a large percentage of the population is opting to vote by mail as opposed to voting in person. We looked extensively into this a couple weeks ago in our Vote by Mail episode. Go check it out if you need a little refresher. At the time of recording this episode, more than 66 million votes have already been cast by mail. We had to change that number 3 times before recording, and will likely be way outdated by the time this episode is released. As we just went over, a blue shift can already naturally occur without any absentee ballots to count. But with 66 million votes being cast already, think about how long it would take to open each envelope, let alone count every vote per candidate. Of course, you're probably thinking, but Claire, the votes have already been cast. That means that they can just start counting the votes as they come in. And the answer to that is not really. Why? Because that would make too much sense, obviously. As we've gone over in previous episodes, elections are conducted differently depending on what state you're in. That means the process of counting votes also varies from state to state. It all depends on the laws passed in each individual state. This undertaking is further complicated when you realize that each state has different guidelines for when they can process absentee ballots versus when they can count absentee ballots. Some states, like Colorado, can start processing absentee ballots upon receipt, but cannot begin counting the ballots until 15 days prior to the election, whereas states like Massachusetts can begin processing absentee ballots upon receipt of the ballot, but may not begin counting until 1 hour after polls close on election day. Other states, such as Wyoming, New York, and Kentucky, are not able to start processing those ballots until election day itself, with the majority of states not allowing votes to be counted until after the polls close, usually around 8 p.m., and with some states, like Maryland, not allowing counting of absentee ballots until the very next day. Once again, in a regular election, the process of counting all the ballots can take up to 30 days to complete. 30 days. Plus the coronavirus, minus the fact that election offices are often underfunded and understaffed. This, of course, leads us to Trump, who has touted easily debunkable claims of voter fraud since 2016, despite being told countless times to his face that there is no evidence to support his claims. Then again, what is evidence to a gut feeling? Am I right? Assuming, of course, that your definition of gut feeling is shamelessly lying, then the whole accusation suddenly gains much more validity. I should have tried this strategy when I was in school, and I could have coasted by with straight A's. Then again, my parents weren't rich enough to pay off all my professors, but I'm sure that's also my fault. I should just stop eating avocado toast, pull myself up by my bootstraps, and just have been born rich. Stupid me. I'll do that next time. The important part about this is that Trump has been laying the groundwork to contest the results of the election, if he were to lose, for 4 straight years. And, as we have said countless times in previous episodes, he has taken steps to obstruct voting efforts, including sabotaging the post office, forcing through conservative judges on the Supreme Court, and a wide variety of voter suppression tactics, all of which have become so common and out in the open, feels like I'm listening to a record that keeps getting stuck on the one particular groove, and all I can hear it play is, voter suppression, voter suppression, voter suppression. The Republican Party has made the commitment of latching onto Trump like some reverse cancer situation, where a body of cells actively seeks out the cancer. The way they have flocked to support a man who has had such a public record of untrustworthiness would be on par with doing something as stupid as going to large public gatherings without protection in the middle of a pandemic. It is the type of situation where, had it been written in screenplay form and submitted to Hollywood executives, it would have been rejected on the grounds of it being an unrealistic premise. But, alas, here we are. Nonetheless, Republicans have already begun employing tactics to further Trump's asinine voter fraud theory by setting up fake ballot boxes in places like California, something that made national news just a few weeks ago. Upon first glance, it is laughable how quickly Republicans were caught in their scandal. But on second glance, it highlights a slightly more terrifying likelihood that Republicans are purposely sabotaging voting efforts so that they can then point to the examples of their own voter fraud as why the results of the election cannot be trusted. Again, to quote ourselves from a previous episode, with a metaphor that is so relevant, it must be used twice. That is the equivalent of selling someone a car and then watching them take out a knife and stab the tires and then claiming the car doesn't drive well. But with the now 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court, it doesn't look like Republicans are trying to do more than the absolute bare minimum to give cause for grounds. Now, while this all may feel very overwhelming, there is still a light at the end of the tunnel. There would be no way for any judge, justice, or official to contest the results of the election if Biden wins in a landslide victory. That would mean that Biden would have to win by double-digit votes in the Electoral College. This seems promising, as Biden has been leading in some polls by as far as 15% nationally. However, it is incredibly important not to get complacent. A video by CGP Gray breaks down how a candidate can win the Electoral College with only 21% of Americans voting for said candidate. We left a link in the show notes. But this is why it is important for you to not only make sure you go out and vote, but to do your best to convince your friends and loved ones to do the same. These are scary times. We are living through history right now. But I intend to be on the side who fought for the institutions of our Democratic Republic and used my right as an American to voice my dissent against an administration that stands for everything I do not. Don't lose sight. But also, don't lose hope. Remember that this election has seen a historic jump in voter registration, and no one registers to support an incumbent. Election Day is just a few days away, and it'll be more than a month until we know for sure who the next president will be. Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. It's gonna be a ride. Since it is the theme of the week, we figured it would make sense to re-release the deep dive on voting from our very first episode. Hope you enjoy it. Here's a little history to start. After America won the Revolutionary War, the Founding Fathers were tasked with creating the United States government. Basically a walk in the park. But one of the things they struggled with and argued about for months was how to elect the President of the United States. George Washington was unanimously voted in as America's first president, but then stepped down after 2 terms to establish a peaceful transition of power. Plus, I'm sure he was like hella tired at that point. Next was John Adams, who was wildly unpopular with Congress, so he served 1 single term and was given the boot. And for anyone who's seen Hamilton, you know how tumultuous the election of 1800 was between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, like at least 4 songs worth. Previously, the candidate who lost the election for president became vice president, but the 12th Amendment in 1804 changed all of that. Along with compromise, the American experiment also was built upon ideals. And in the Founding Fathers' ideal world, there were many candidates, and the people would vote for the best one. Simple, right? It's like an internet poll for naming things. Think Bodie McBoatface. But ultimately, reality hit, and the two-party system emerged. Again, think compromise. There were some officials who suggested that the president be elected by Congress. Others thought that this would lead too easily to corruption, and that the president should be decided by a democratic, popular vote of the people. However, there were those that claimed that the people would not have access to information about the proposed candidates because, you know, horses could only go so fast, and Twitter wasn't invented for a few 100 years. They also feared that the will of the people would lead the country astray and maintain a mob-like mentality. There was also a general consensus that a president appealing directly to that mob would wield too much power. So the founders settled on something that would combine the two ideas called, drumroll please, the Electoral College, which was a nice happy medium, and we still have this system today. So now that you have an understanding of how the Electoral College came to be, let's talk about its function and how it affects you today. Like I said, the Electoral College is a combination of a popular vote and a vote by officials. So let's break it down. Step 1. Sometime before the national general election happens, each state's political parties choose a number of electors. The number of electors is established by how many senators and how many representatives each state has in Congress. The combination of electors is called the slate. Step 2. Voters in each state cast votes for the candidate of their choice. Whichever candidate has the most votes in that state gets their party's electors. So, if the Democratic candidate wins Illinois, the Democratic Party of Illinois sends their electors to the Electoral College. And from there, the electors spend 4 years drinking and smoking weed and telling their parents they are definitely still going to class. All jokes aside, archives.gov put it best. When voters in each state cast votes for the presidential candidate of their choice, they are voting to select their state's electors. Step 3. The electors meet in December after the November general elections and cast their ballot for the party and candidate they support. Occasionally, electors will defer or abstain from voting for their party's candidate, but that's pretty rare. Step 4. Those ballots are then sent to Congress and officially counted in January. Whichever candidate has 270 electoral votes, which is the majority of the 538 potential electoral votes, wins the presidency. So you might be asking me, why the hell does any of this matter, Claire? Well, if you want your candidate to win, they must have a majority in your state. Each state operates on a winner-takes-all mentality. So the winner of the popular vote of each state gets the electors' votes for that state. If you want to dig a little deeper and check out the resources we used, they'll be linked in the show notes. And if anything else, now you have some fun facts for trivia night. Today's show. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at @sitstill_lookopinionated and on Twitter at @sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and written by myself, Claire Malky, and Michael Dritto. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. See you next week. Bye.